Lord, I thank you so much that you desire to be with us. I believe that you look forward to being with us. And I thank you so much that you're here. And we praise you this morning because you are God. And we look at the beautiful sunshine. We look around us and we see creation. And Lord, may that not lead us to worship what you created, but I pray lead us to worship you. And as we spend some time in your word, as we spend some time listening for your voice, I pray that you speak clearly, that you help us to set aside the things that are on our minds right now and focus on you. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, the years 1979 to 1980 were tough on my family. Well, at least from my perspective. I was about 10 years old, and the summer of 1979, my brother graduated high school. He's my oldest brother, and he was my hero. I mean, I looked up to him. I thought he was amazing. He was tough. He was a leader, and he was responsible, and just all these things that I want. And sometimes he was my protector. Sometimes from my other brothers and sometimes from other people. And I loved him to death, but he graduated and he moved out. And it left this hole in our house that was difficult for me. Let me tell you just briefly about my family. I'm the youngest of eight, sort of. My parents were married previously to other people and had several kids. So there was in my family, there was three. I had three brothers and three sisters. Most of those were halves. Now, that didn't mean a lot to me. I understood what it was, but we were like the Brady Bunch, okay? Except for when my parents got married, then they had me and they had my older brother. Not my oldest brother, just my older brother, because that wouldn't make any sense. There was some challenges. I didn't actually realize I was from a blended family until later. I never put that title to my family. I know that seems really ridiculous. I mean, I had been in youth ministry for years, and Sabrina and I had just gotten married, and we were headed off on our honeymoon, and I was talking about, you know, how do we be a blended family with Campbell, and I was talking about, you know, we have to learn how to do that, and she goes, well, you're from a blended family. And I almost said, no, I'm not. And then I paused and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I am. And it sunk in a little bit more that, you know, this isn't the way everybody's family is. You know, we only know family based on our experience. But so 79-80 was tough. My oldest brother moved out and it just left. I mean, I was kind of depressed and it was difficult. A few months later, my sister, who was 16, dropped a bomb on us that she was pregnant, and it was a little bit rough in our household. My sister was my mom's, but there was always tension between my dad and her, and boy, the stress really raised. Not only that, but the father of the child was from the prominent family in our church, which made it really awkward. So 79-80 was really rough. And then a little bit later, my 16-year-old brother, blended family, remember, so there was some overlap here of ages. My 16-year-old brother, he dropped out of school and moved out. It was a tough year for my family. So as I think of family, I have some pictures of family. And in that year, it felt like my family was kind of disintegrating. I don't know what your experience is as family. You know, but I do know this. It's one thing to have family, but it's a whole nother thing to be a family, okay? It's one thing to have family. It's a whole nother thing to be family. And when family feels like it falls apart, you cease being family and you start to be just part of a family. You just have family. Well, today as we look at Galatians, we're looking at Galatians chapter 6. And he closes, Paul closes his letter as he begins to use the picture of a family. He calls them children of God. You remember how he worded that, right? He said there's no longer Jew nor Greek, no male or female, no slave or free, but we're all children of God. We are all supposed to be family. God's plan is for us to be family, not to just be part of a family. Okay, let me say that again. God's plan for us is to be family, not just be part of a family. And so this is a picture that I think that Paul is wanting to paint for us. That's how I see the end of Galatians, all right? My two oldest brothers, since 1979, things have continued to be rough. They're still part of my family, but they're not really family. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but they don't ever come for holidays. They don't really call and find out things are going on. I'm Facebook friends with them, but we don't really share our life. Last summer, I tried to connect with one of them. While we were on vacation, and I think both of us found it just a whole lot easier to not respond when we tried to clench that, here's when we're going to meet together. So we were willing to kind of talk about, oh yeah, let's kind of, tomorrow works good, and then we just kind of, and I left town. They were over in Kalispell. He's part of my family, but he's not really family. We're going to celebrate my parents' 50th anniversary. Man, amazing. I can't believe it. That means I'm getting close to 50. But, I didn't need to say that, I don't think. Well, anyway, they don't even know our plans. For their 50th, our family is going to go on a cruise. And that's the way we're going to celebrate their 50th anniversary. They got married on Christmas Day. I think it's because my dad had the day off. And, we decided that's going to be the Christmas present that everybody spends on. So we're all going to go on a cruise. I think it would have been cheaper to buy gifts, but this is what we're doing. And so my two oldest brothers don't even know that's what we're doing. My dad had open heart surgery 2 years ago. My brothers didn't call. They didn't show any concern. That's their dad. See, they're still part of the family, but they're not really operating like family. There's hurts on both sides. We could all come up with excuses of why it exists the way it does. But the truth of the fact is that we're not actually acting like family. Paul tells us that we're adopted, and that now we need to learn to be family. You know, coming from a blended family, those two families coming together, there's a learning curve on how to be family. Well, we're all adopted, and there's a learning curve for us to how to be family, not just be part of a family. And so Paul is painting a picture for us, and within that, he's instructing us that we should love each other. He gives us the law of family, okay? But let's look at it from a positive tone. As we read Galatians 6, we're going to read 1 through 10, verses 1 through 10. Will you just look and see, is it with the picture of family, is there something that stands out to you, okay? But let's take a step back before we look at chapter 6. Is Paul sets it up. He sets the stage. In Galatians 5:6, he says, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. Okay, as we think about family, as we think about the picture that Paul wants to paint for us, as he gives us some guidelines, right? He has just told us that we are free from the law, and then he gives us some rules, which is really kind of strange. But what he's doing is he's painting a picture, and it's important if we're going to see it as a picture that we stop and what does it look like from across the room? Well, across the room, what it says is the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. And so as we get a little bit closer, he goes on to say in Galatians 5, 13 and 15, he says, serve one another humbly in love. This is how faith is expressed through love, is serving one another humbly. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you bite and devour each other, families don't struggle with that, I know. But if you bite and devour each other, watch out or you will be destroyed by each other. Now with that in mind, he goes on. He talks about we're all children of God, right? And he says this. He kind of gives us this picture between a flesh-driven life and a spirit-driven life. And a flesh-driven life, he goes through a list of things that we kind of looked at last week. And then he went through a list of what fruit of the Spirit. And I gave you this statement that I said, a flesh-led life has the perspective of how do those around me affect me? Okay? A person that's driven by their flesh, a person that's driven by their sinful nature, their perspective is how do the people around me affect me? Now, it's really easy to be a victim with this perspective. Do you know what I mean? Because even today, I can think of a few things that have happened that people affected me. And I could take the victim role. I know, now you're thinking, whoa, what happened to him? Someone said hi to me. But a spirit-led life is from the perspective of how do I affect those around me? Not so much as how do they affect me, but how do I affect them? So he goes to say this, Galatians 6, brothers and sisters. He's teaching us how to be family. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in sin, you who live by the Spirit, you who have the perspective of how do I affect those around me, those that live by the Spirit, should restore the person gently. But watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Remember what the law of Christ is, right? It told us that in Galatians 5, and I actually kind of read it, is the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. That the whole law is summed up in loving your neighbor as yourself. Right? Carry each other's burdens. In this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. Nevertheless, the one who receives instruction in the word should share all good things with their instructor. I don't have that as a point, but, you know, share all good things with your instructor. You guys can let God talk to you about that. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh, from the flesh will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. Especially if they're family. I think it is ironic that he just talked about freedom from the law and then he gives them instruction. Here's what you're supposed to do. Here's what you need to do. So here are the rules that I kind of pulled out of here. Number one is that family works together to keep standing. All right? He says, if someone is caught in sin, in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Now, it's an interesting thing that we might read that a little bit wrong, okay? We may see that phrase, caught in sin, like somebody's fishing, you know? Somebody has got a net and, you know, you're caught red-handed, right? Your hand in the cookie jar, somebody's out doing something they shouldn't, and you catch them doing it. And so then you should restore them gently, but that's not really what he's talking about here. What he's really talking about is those that Temptation slipped up on, snuck in on them, and they slipped up. It's not an accident. Sin isn't an accidental thing. Sin is a choice that we make to break the known will of God. But temptation can catch us off guard. And if we don't keep our guard up, what happens is it gets the best of us, and it gets kind of pulls us in. And before we know it, we're all flat on our face. So when he says caught in sin, NIV uses that phrase. The other translations I kind of like better. They use slip up and things like that. But what he's saying is caught off guard. You who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. I don't know about you, but there is something in us, though, that kind of likes to watch people slip and fall. No, that sounds terrible. I don't mean that in necessarily sin, but there is, I think it has revealed our nature. Video cameras have revealed our sin nature, okay? Ever since the invention of video cameras, people have been recording people falling, right? I think America's Funniest Home Videos, which I think has been on for like 40 years now, that's probably an exaggeration. Maybe it's 30. You know what most of their videos are? Most of the time are people that have slipped and fallen or done something. And you know what happens is the person with the video camera, most of the time they don't set the camera down and go help the person. They just sit there and watch it, right? I think it's revealed something about even us as Christians is that we're content in just watching somebody slip and fall. Maybe just to help you to see if you struggle with this, let's watch these videos. There's two of them here that we're going to watch. Nobody's stopping to help. Yeah, there's sound to it. And nobody helps. And mom is just videoing. You guys are sick. You're laughing at people's falling. Let's watch this other one. That was all women. Let's watch the men fail.
Superhero, that's all I'm doing. I'm just so happy, ordinary, everyday.
So you're laughing. There's something in us that enjoys, I mean, there is, right? I don't think we enjoy watching our brothers fall, though. I don't think we enjoy watching our family get tripped up in sin. And yet, I think oftentimes we're like the video camera holder that just stand there and watch it. And that's it. Paul's telling us that's not our job. That's not what we should do as family. So as I read that, you know, I have to admit to you that I think of, you know, somebody gets caught in sin. I think of, my picture is the adulterous woman that gets drugged before Jesus. Because she was caught in adultery, right? For some reason, I think that probably all of us, now this is a stretch, I could be wrong, but I think all of us have this tendency to think, oh, he's talking about these big sins. What about gossip? What about just not doing what he's told us to? What about not fulfilling what God has called us, each one of us, to? Well, those things that God puts us in people's lives for a reason. And we see things for a reason because he wants us to reach out our hand. The question, though, is are we working to restore others when they fall? Okay, that word restore is a big deal. We've seen people who are those condemning ones. Well, you failed, and I'm just going to point my finger at you. That's not what Paul's describing here. Those overtaken. What do people do that are overtaken by sin that are part of a family but not family? What happens to them? Do you have anybody in mind? I mean, I can think of several. It starts this slide backwards in their life. And if nobody steps in to help, a lot of times that slide just kind of keeps going. And they get to a place where it's really hard to get up. And it's really hard to even want to come back into the family. I know of a few people, even in our community, who can't bring themselves through that door because they're concerned about the way we would respond to them. Because for some reason they think that once they walk in the door, that's when they interact with us. When we see them in our everyday life. Faith expressing itself through love looks like somebody reaching down and helping a brother or a sister. I'm not talking about somebody you don't know. I'm talking about people in your life that you do know. That have ceased being family, that they're just kind of part of the family. James said it this way, my brothers and sisters, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring that person back, remember this. Whoever turns a sinner from the error of their ways will save them from death and cover over a multitude of sin. God told the Israelites, if you see your fellow Israelites' donkey or fallen ox fallen on the road, don't ignore it. Help the owner get it to its feet. Even then they had to help them. I mean, yeah, they're talking about wildlife, but I mean, excuse me, livestock, but it's still there. Are we, as family, there for each other? Proverbs says, one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. But there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. This restoring, this reaching out and helping somebody up, it's not about condemnation, it's about restoration. It's about being reconciled. Reconciled to God and reconciled to family. Okay, that's rule number one. And rule number two that he gives us is test your own actions. He says, if anyone thinks they are something, then and when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to anyone, to someone else. When he says that they can take pride in themselves, I hope that you recognize what he's saying here is not that we have any reason to be prideful. He had just been talking about that we are justified by faith. That what makes us right with God is because of our faith in Jesus. It's Jesus' righteousness that we receive. And we can compare ourselves with anybody else, and we can always find somebody worse than us. And we can justify our own actions. And we can say, well, we're better than this person at least. Right? Well, at least I'm not as bad as that guy. I mean, I can find several in our church that I'm better than spiritually. I mean, at least one or two. But he doesn't say that. He says, compare, test your actions. You know, what he's really saying is listen, none of us measure up. Remember that. None of us measure up. If you think you have pride, if you're looking at your brother and your sister and you think, look at that. I don't struggle with that. You're not testing your own actions. You're comparing yourself with somebody else, and pride does well up. Maybe what you struggle with isn't what your neighbor struggles with, or your brother or your sister. But each one of us has an area, has areas that God is dealing with us. He said to the Romans, Paul did, he says, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought. But think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. Be honest. None of us measure up. We should be showing grace to our brothers and sisters. We're here to help them stand up. Rule number three is, I've worded it so that it sounds like my mom, okay? We're talking about family, and so I've worded it kind of with something my mom would say, tie your shoelaces. You know, an untied shoe will get you almost every time. He says, watch yourself or you may be tempted. Can we be honest with ourselves and recognize where we're tempted? Sometimes we dabble in those areas that we're weak. And we sometimes will step where we shouldn't step. Sometimes we pretend that we're helping somebody with an area in their life, but the truth of the matter is that we're just trying to get close to what we would really like to do. Or we don't pay attention, and that temptation shows up, and we don't catch it. You know, pastors struggle with this. There's a reason why there's a lot of pastors that are out of the ministry today because they've gotten into an affair with somebody and recognized the temptation that they were in. But we're not all pastors. So if a pastor has to be on guard, I'm thinking, we probably, every one of you does. Recognize that you will have temptations. And the enemy is pretty crafty. He wants to get you in a situation where you're going to be tempted. That we should recognize that the times that we're tempted as well. You know, sometimes it's just what time of day it is that we're tempted more. Sometimes it's what is going on in your life. Are you in a fight with somebody? Because when I'm in a disagreement, when I'm going at odds with somebody, you know what? I don't feel as spiritual. I need to be aware of that. If we step out and we reach out to help somebody, we need to recognize where we are at temptation-wise, how susceptible we are. Tie your shoelaces. So when you help somebody up, be very cautious because you are in a position of vulnerability. Paul told the Corinthians, he said this, so if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. It's not fear-driven. It's just that we should recognize when we are susceptible and be honest with ourselves that, yeah, I'm feeling tempted. The next rule is pull your weight. He says something that's really strange in that. I don't know if you guys caught it. He says that we should carry each other's burdens, right? We should help to carry each other's burdens. But then he goes on to say we should all carry our own load. Well, is he contradicting himself? No. We have to understand the words he used here. When he talks about a burden, what he's referring to is, you know, when we fail, we have this weight on us. And it's pretty tough to get up sometimes. It's tough to get back up on our feet. You know, you guys might not know this, but there's been some times in my life that I've failed spiritually. That might be a surprise to you, but and when I felt like just laying there, I felt like just giving up. I felt like just saying, why even try? I'm tired of this. I feel like just a failure. God brought somebody along. And all he said was, Darren, I still believe in you. I didn't really believe in myself. I was like this weight lifted off of me. I was able to get back up again. That's somebody coming along and carrying some of the burden. Now, we should all carry our own load. What he means by that is that word is a term used for like a soldier's pack. Now, I have to admit that I've never been in the military. The closest thing I've been is camping with teenagers, okay? And that's a long ways away from military. But I do know this, that hiking in someplace, I am not going to carry everybody's food. It's not right, and I'm enabling them, and why should one person carry all the weight, right? Pull our weight. We're expected. God has given us a task. Each of us a task. And when you don't do that task, what you're doing is you're putting stress on the family. Do you think that you think everybody in our church is pulling their weight? Let's be honest. Yes or no? Okay. So some of you are answering, some of you aren't. What do we do about that? I mean, the question really should be, am I pulling my weight? Am I carrying my load? Am I doing the job within the church that God has asked me to do? Because as family, we're supposed to carry our load. Now, sometimes that's being involved in a ministry. In fact, I believe for every one of us, he has asked us to be involved in some type of ministry. And that's part of our load. But then the other part of our load also is living a holy life like he's asked us to. Every one of us, God has asked us to let go of something, to not do something, to abstain from something. For whatever reason, he has asked us to do this. And what he asked you may not be what he asked somebody else. But it's your load. In Jesus' words, he said, take up your cross and follow me daily. We're supposed to be sacrificial people. Being a follower of Christ means that we don't do everything that we want to do. Because that's really a life driven by the flesh. So we carry our load. We are doing our part ministry-wise, and we're also striving to live a holy life. When we start to carry somebody else's load, we begin to enable them to not do their job. We begin to enable them to not pull their weight. And there's a whole bunch of stuff right there, okay? Live a holy life, do the ministry that you should be doing, and stop enabling others to not do what God's asked them to. Okay? Rules of the family, last one. Wait on the Lord of the harvest. I love that term, Lord of the harvest. Look at what Paul told the Corinthians. He says, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labor. Paul said to the Galatians, let us not become weary in doing good. For at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. You know, in context, you know what I see? I see he's talking about those people that have reached out and have been rejected. The person didn't want restoration. Have you ever tried to help somebody that didn't want help? I have a tendency to go, fine then, I'm give up. And then the next person that needs help, I'm like, well, I remember what happened the last time. I'm not doing that again. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. It isn't easy to reach out and help people. It isn't easy to help to restore somebody who's been caught in sin. It isn't easy to carry our load. Helping others up is that planting and that watering that he talked about. Being family is difficult. Now, if you grew up in a family where everything was wonderful, you're very fortunate. But being family is difficult. Disagreements, failures, disappointments, hurt, being let down. If you're not Jesus, you're going to let somebody down. So you're going to let somebody down. If that person you look up to isn't Jesus, they're going to fail you. Because they're not Jesus. Family isn't easy. But we will reap what we sow. I've always read that in the negative. I don't know about you guys, but I always read it as, well, you know, it's those people that aren't living the way they should. They're going to reap what they sow. But what about the positive side? When we're operating with what he's telling us, we are going to reap what we sow. We should be faithful to the task. And we wait on him. He's the thing that makes it grow. He's the one that makes it grow. We can't be responsible for the results. All we can do is be responsible to carry our load. And we wait on him. Jesus didn't call him the Lord of the harvest for nothing. I want to close with one thought, okay? It's a statement that Paul makes that I've always read with the understanding of how other people respond to the gospel. You know, the atheists who deny God, that Paul says, God cannot be mocked. But if we step back and we look at that statement, God cannot be mocked, in the context of when he said it, he's talking about family. Where does that fit in? As Christians, we have been adopted. We've taken on the name Christian. We've taken on the name Little Christs. We carry his name, and how we live out that name is either a glorification of Jesus or a mockery. And how well we do what Paul has talked about shows what name we give. I said I was the youngest of eight. Seven of us grew up in the same household. We all went to the same schools. There was a name, a million name. And I was the last of it, and I got it. My brothers and sisters gave me a name. I heard, oh, you're Randy's brother. Oh, you're Lori's brother. Oh, you're a million. Sometimes it was good, sometimes it wasn't good. But I carried the name, and so I was a million. And it was a reflection on my whole family. It was really weird. My senior year, my English teacher had my dad as a student. And I was a reflection upon him. So what kind of name are you giving Jesus? Because he cannot be mocked. He will not be mocked. The statement in context should be applied to how we work as family. When we don't operate as family, when we are just part of a family and we're not family, we're mocking God. Are you persevering in doing good? Or have you given up? Are you carrying your pack? Pulling your weight? Are your shoelaces tied? Are you testing your own actions? Are you helping others get back on their feet? Whether you're family or just part of the family, you carry the family name. How you represent the family is important to God. He will not be mocked. Being family isn't easy. And if you don't act like family, it's a mockery of him. So, my question to you, are you family or are you just part of the family? Because we will reap what we sow.